12 o'clock. You're in tune to KZSU Stanford. And it's time once again for another edition of the Lunch Special.
I've got 90,000 pounds in my pajamas. I've got 40,000 French francs in my fridge. I've got lots of lovely lira. Now the Deutsche Mark's getting dearer, and my dollar bills would buy the Brooklyn Bridge. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There's nothing like a newly minted pound. Everyone must hanker for the butchness of a banker. It's accountancy that wakes the world around. You can keep your Marxist ways, but it's only just a phase. For it's money, money, money makes the world go round.
A little Monty Python for your listening pleasure this afternoon. And today, Stanford grad and author James Wood is our guest. And welcome back to Stanford, James.
Thanks, Bert. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. You were in the Bay Area a long time. You now live in Southern California. But you've written a book called From Ramen to Riches, Building Wealth in Your 20s. And is that from some kind of personal experience you had?
Well, you know, in my early 20s, after I graduated from school, I was the poster child for what not to do with your money. I had a great job as a software engineer and learned to fly, learned to scuba dive, traveled all over the world. And my financial epiphany happened with a mortgage banker, actually, at age 26. I sat down with him looking to borrow a bunch of money, and he looked at my application and then up at me and said, "You mean to tell me you've been employed as a software engineer for 5 years and your net worth is $500? And I said, "Wow, that was sort of embarrassing." But he was right. So I resolved out of that to start paying attention to my money, learn how to manage it, save it, and investing. And so I wrote From Ramen to Riches with an eye toward helping people in their 20s avoid the financial mistakes that I made at that time in my life.
Now, books usually take more than a year to write. How long did you work on this book?
It took me about 6 months and then a couple more months to get feedback from people, which is really helpful. And the whole process was about 9 months.
Wow, that's amazing. So since the 08 downturn and the economic debacle we've gotten ourselves into, did that have anything to do with the impetus for the book?
You know, it was part of it, but, you know, in thinking back to when I first started working in the early 80s, there was a pretty nasty recession going on then as well. You know, interest rates were sky high. I remember paying 12.7% interest on my first car loan, which I, by the way, took out 100% loan and put the tax and license on my Visa card is a great example of what not to do. And so I guess I've seen a couple of cycles, and it's certainly not pleasant right now with the economy being as it is, but I know that things will cycle back away again the other way eventually.
Mm-hmm. How did the downturn affect your writing of the book? Did it, while you were writing it, did it have any effect on your perspective? Did the downturn change your perspective at all on how you looked at things from before, say from the 90s, you know, and then into the 2000s and then after?
It certainly made me grateful that I had learned to pay attention to what I was doing, you know, well in advance of when that happened.
Right.
Because, you know, I was lucky to have had built up a decent cushion. And our income was definitely slammed like everybody else's, but at least I wasn't drowning in debt and was in a position to be able to work my way through it in a way that wasn't terribly painful.
Did you know any folks that got decimated by it?
Oh, yeah. We have friends who have declared bankruptcy, who have lost their houses. It's been a really, really, really painful thing, yeah.
Wow. So the name of the book is From Ramen to Riches, Building Wealth in Your 20s. James Wood, the author, our guest today, Stanford grad and author. And you did bring some music. Now, the Monty Python tune, there's a big theme to all the music today. And why did you open up with Monty Python, the money song?
First, I think it's a hilariously funny tune, and I think for most of your listeners out there, most of the songs I'll have today will be a bit of a music history seminar, since I graduated in 1981. My knowledge of pop music pretty much expired around then. But I tried to bring a selection that I thought would reflect a number of the topics that we cover in the book, and thought we could have some fun with it.
Very cool. Well, Why don't we just play another song for the folks? It looks like you got Sticks with the Grand Illusion. You want to set this up?
Yeah, this song is about the Grand Illusion. Really speaks to this illusion of keeping up with the Joneses and having all the stuff that they have, and it's really just a fantasy in the sense that that's not necessarily what your life really needs to be about.
Mm-hmm. And again, probably came from personal experience, huh?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, certainly when I was in college, I had to have the designer jeans and all that stuff. And I've realized now I'm quite happy with the store brand at Costco and pay $60 or $70 less.
You think it's changed for the kids now? Or you think they're still caught up in that same cycle because corporate America is so adept at marketing now? Now they can take something like gang members in Los Angeles wearing baggy jeans to hide their gats, their guns, and they turned it into a fashion statement. And now all kids and most kids don't even know why they wear baggy pants and pull down around their ankles. And it all started with gang members. You think it's different for kids today, or they're caught up in that same cycle?
I think the media is very powerful in influencing kids, as are friends and family as well. That there are all those different things that come into play in influencing how we choose to spend our money.
Cool. Well, let's listen to Sticks.
Thank you.
Styx on a Monday afternoon. And here with Stanford grad and author, current author of the brand new book, From Ramen to Riches, Building Wealth in Your 20s, James Wood. And why don't you go ahead and backtrack a little bit and talk more about why you played that Styx song, The Grand Illusion.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit before the song on, you know, the influences that we have in our culture that kind of drive us to keep up with the Joneses or wear the things that our friends are wearing and so on. And when you think about the influence of your friends, the media, your parents, a lot of those messages that we get, particularly from the media and from our friends, may or may not really fit with who we are. And so I found for myself it was really a helpful exercise to sit down and think about, you know, what is my money philosophy? What does money do for me? What is my relationship with money? And I realized that for me, I don't like to really accumulate a lot of stuff. What I care about is having freedom, to do the things that I want, freedom to travel, freedom to be with my family. And so in From Ramen to Riches, I have a chapter that's called Your Money Philosophy and Life Vision, and I encourage the reader to kind of go through that process of thinking about what are the messages that you got when you were younger, what are the things that really ring true in terms of who you are, and what are the things that you want to cast off. And along with that, trying to think out 10 or 15 years to think about what do I want my life to look like at some point in the future. And then backing up from there and thinking about how does money enable some of those things to happen and how can I put a plan in place to make it work for me.
Do you think kids are a little more distracted nowadays because it's like I mentioned earlier, there's so much bling out there for them to get attracted by? You know, there's sports, there's hip-hop, there's the entertainment culture. Right.
Sure.
And it's so well constructed now. It's around everything. When a movie comes out, you got to have the clothes. You got to have the little cup, the little toy that comes with it, you know, all that. You think it's harder for kids now because there were more distractions than what we had back then? Back then, it was kind of innocent, you know?
Yeah, I think there's certainly an element of truth to that, though Madison Avenue was pretty pervasive when I was a kid as well. You know, as I mentioned, I had to have the designer jeans when I was in college as well. But I think you're right in the sense of there are a lot more varied ways to be inundated with, you know, the latest and greatest must-have thing. And it's a real treadmill once you get caught up in that sort of stuff to keep playing that game and have a lot of money vacuumed out of your pocket while you're trying to keep up with that.
The other one is, too bad that the school systems are now across America teaching for the test instead of presenting books like yours and giving kids, because back then when I was in school too, and we're close to the same age, one of the complaints was that I always had was they weren't giving me tools that I could take into my future life. I wasn't learning for the test, but it was kind of like that. And even now, it seems to be even worse, where kids aren't being given tools. They have to go on the street to find that stuff. Your book is definitely a tool to help kids out for the future. You think there's any way that we could take a book like yours and get it into the educational system?
Boy, I'd be really happy about that for sure. But, you know, you're right.
Just get that idea, that mindset.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm sure I must have learned something in high school, but the one thing that really still stays with me to this day is a typing class. You know, I use a computer keyboard every single day. And when I think about spending money every day, everybody spends money every day. And so we're turning young adults loose into the working world after high school or college and expecting them to manage budgets, deal with credit cards, handle student loans, make investment decisions for their 401ks at work. And many of them have not had any formal training on how to do that. It's not hard, but you need to hear it from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And develop the mental muscles to be able to do that on a regular basis so that it is really a lifetime habit. And so it's really amazing to me that that personal finance is not a required subject for every single high school student because it's so essential.
Definitely. And now, well, I don't know what the exact ratio is, but when you got out of college in 1981, the debt that a typical student, college student in America owed was, I don't know what it was, but now it's got to be at least 10 or more times higher, right?
It's pretty shocking. I have a 9-year-old son now, and so we are looking forward to sending him to college in the next 9 or 10 years. He's waving at me from the other room.
I wonder how much that's going to cost.
Yeah, if I extrapolate that out, it's, a shocking number if the tuition rates keep going up at the same rate they've been the last decade. So it's tough for families to figure out how to afford that and for the students to be able to deal with paying that debt off once they graduate.
Mm-hmm. The book is From Ramen to Riches, Building Wealth in Your 20s. Our guest, James Wood, Stanford grad and author. Coming up, and set this up, James, it's The Beatles, When I'm 64.
Yeah, another classic song I love, and we'll talk about it a little bit after the song plays, but with my trusty HBC 12C financial calculator, have learned how to do compound interest and figure out the time value of money, and it's really pretty shocking how little you need to save and invest when you're in your 20s to end up a millionaire at the end of the game. So we'll talk about that after the song.
Okay.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
When you're 64, I thought I was going to turn 64, I would have taken better care of myself. That's the line I always use in that. Coming back now with author and Stanford grad James Wood, his new book, From Ramen to Riches, trying to teach the kids. Have you had an opportunity to talk to any kids? Now, you stay in Southern California, down San Diego way, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And have you had an opportunity to get, because really this book is best, like I was saying earlier, probably in the classroom, you know, like high school. Don't wait till they get to college, because in college it's almost already too late.
Yeah, my wife and I have had the opportunity to do that with groups of low-income kids in particular, and it's been a fun process and really eye-opening, I think, for them. You know, when you talk to somebody who's in their late teens and ask them to be thinking about retirement, they kind of roll their eyes and say, you must be kidding. You know, that's
right.
30, 40, 50 years away.
Right.
But it turns out that one of the biggest advantages that the young have over people who are even somewhat older is time.
That they're young.
Yeah, well, and from the perspective of their money, there's something called the time value of money, which means basically that a dollar in hand now is worth more than a dollar at some point in the future because it can be invested or earned compound interest over time.
If you can hang on to it.
That's right. So if I can go into geek mode for just a minute,
let me give
you an example. So if you're 20 years old right now, if you want to be a millionaire at age 70, all you need to do is invest $4.25 a day, $4.25, over a 50-year time horizon at the average return that the stock market has delivered historically, and you'll have $1 million at the end of that. Now, if you wait only 10 years and start at age 30, that number goes from $125 a month up to $300. And if you start at age 40, it goes up to $700. And beyond that, you probably just buy a lotto ticket.
Mm-hmm. But the one of the things that the reality of kids have today, that, and I mentioned earlier, was when you walk out of college with $100,000 debt, maybe that $4, you know, it still works. That equation works. But if you owe that much money, and then you got to go get a job and try to pay that debt off, it kind of does screw the whole thing up, doesn't
it? Yeah, that's right. You know, so it's kind of a hard thing to think through, but you know, student loans can be a good form of debt as long as you're careful about, you know, accumulating an amount that's appropriate for what you're likely to earn given the major that you happen to have selected, right? So if you're good at learning how to manage your cash flow and you have a decent paying job, then those loans become manageable. Granted, they're not fun to have to deal with and deal with them for 10 years or so.
Right.
But if you have a handle on how to manage the whole package, then they become manageable. I think where people get in trouble is if they take on too much, or they're not being careful about where their cash flow is going each month. You know, if you're always spending more than's coming in, that's not good. You know.
And it's funny how we got in the situation, because it used to be that our parents, when we were growing up, they put away money for a college fund for us. And that fund was supposed to be enough to pay for college. And that worked probably up until the mid-70s. It was a natural thing. Parents had a fund, you know, like a 401k or whatever, and you put it aside. And it wasn't even 401ks back then. You didn't get a tax deferment, but it was you were able to do that until about the 70s or the early 80s. And then everything seemed to flip. And apparently college became for profit in this country.
It's certainly become much tougher for most families to be able to afford it. That's for sure.
And now there's a mode of it's almost unthinkable, unless you're part of the wealthiest Americans, that the parents could take care of your education. So it's natural for kids to think of taking loans to get an education, where 30 years ago that was unheard of. You didn't go into debt to go get a college education. You went and got a college education so you could go have a career.
Right, right. Or at least the student loans that I had certainly weren't nearly as big as what I hear about for many of the students today. That's for
right.
sure.
And yeah. maybe that factor might that equation might factor in somewhere along the way and help these kids out to get out of that trap, because they're definitely trapped now, especially now that they've increased the UC tuition 3 times in the last 18 months.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
3 times. Here with the author, the new book, From Ramen to Riches, Stanford grad and author, James Wood. And when you got out of university here for your grad school, you went to work for HP.
Yeah, actually, I was working for HP at the time that I was working on my master's degree.
Uh-huh.
So I worked over on California Avenue, so it was great just to be able to ride my bike over to campus. Took a short 5 minutes, and I'd come over for a class and go back to work.
And how long did you work on the grad school?
It took me 2.5 years.
That's pretty good. That's
yeah.
not bad for having a day job, too.
Yep.
Wow. And how long were you at HP?
25 years. 25
Man.
Years.
And those are some interesting 25 years. Talk about that experience, because back then, we're talking pre-Microsoft, right?
When I started, yeah, that's kind of scary to think about it. Yeah, Apple Computer had just started at
uh-huh.
the time, and the PC was just beginning to roll into view.
Jobs and Wozniak, the two, and Gates was around here too. They were all hanging out for a while, weren't they?
Yeah, it was a fun, exciting time. But you know, there was a nasty tech recession then as well in the mid '80s. At the time, I remember many of the semiconductor companies were on the verge of going under.
Really?
And suddenly the PC
hadn't come in yet, right?
Yeah, and then the PC arrived and took off, with the microprocessor, and a whole ecosystem grew up around that.
Yeah, remember payphones?
Shocking, isn't it?
Before cell phones.
Yeah. You still see them.
No, isn't it amazing? And I think about this now, to speaking of progress. 5 years ago, we didn't have Twitter. Just 5 years ago, not 10 or 20. We didn't have Twitter. We barely had texting. Sure, everybody had a cell phone. But now, so what's it going to look like in 5 more years? Because this thing seems to replicate itself exponentially each time it flips. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the technology is really amazing, isn't it?
Right, it's jumping. And I can't even imagine what it's going to be like in 5 years. Are they going to be putting chips in your head? You're going to have a little contact lens with a little printout on it where you just look there and just think about it and then it just comes up? I don't know.
Well, personally, I miss the charming red phone boxes in the UK. You know, I'm hoping those will come back in some form.
What were those? The red phone boxes?
Yeah, remember those?
No. What were those?
Oh, they were very, very charming design, but they basically have a payphone in them.
Yeah. UK payphones.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, you can't find a payphone now.
It's hard.
It really is. It's amazing. Here with the author, From Ramen to Riches, James Wood, trying to help the kids in their 20s. Probably better get to them when they're about 15, though, huh? Up next, the Beach Boys with Fun, Fun, Fun. And this must have to go back to that carefree adolescence you had, huh?
Well, I will freely confess right here that I'm not a car guy.
Uh-huh.
And I'll go into geek mode again after the song because I run the numbers on what it costs you to have a car. But what I like about this song is it really reflects our car culture. You know, this is way back from the 60s, but it hasn't changed that much.
Uh-uh. Gotten worse.
Yep.
Another world, man, when your biggest worry was when daddy took the T-Bird away. Of course, that still happens in some neighborhoods.
Well, I like to kind of play with the song a little and wonder, I don't think it would quite have the same cachet if daddy took the Yugo car keys away. Do you remember those?
The
Eastern European car from the mid-80s that had a reputation of rusting in the showroom and a quality reputation to match, I think.
Well, the best one was the Pinto.
Right on, yeah.
I don't even know if people remember that one.
Yeah.
I still see a couple around, too. I'm surprised that there's even still a... I didn't see them rolling, though. They were on the back of a truck.
Yeah. But, and, you know, you think about our car culture, right? I mean, look at the advertisements. There's always some, you know, hot babe that's conspicuously placed in the scenery somewhere of a car commercial or a truck commercial.
Oh, yeah.
And for some reason, guys seem to be most susceptible to this. I'm not quite sure why.
You're not?
I don't know.
You're married.
Oh, well, you know what? A car gets me from point A to point B, and I don't really care much about horsepower and all the doodads and all that stuff. I just want to get where I'm going.
You know, it is funny because that you say that, because the reason you wrote your book, you wrote it for kids in their 20s, and it seems that Madison Avenue always knew they had to go after the young.
Yeah.
If you get the young, the old will follow.
Yeah.
You know, and they learned early on how to get the young, and that car culture really became it. But it's funny, too, since the... since the price of gas reached $4 a gallon all across the country, there did become a major backlash, you know, and people not only stopped driving as much and you know, kind of hurt the gas companies that way, but there's a big wave now of the electric car. You know, we got Tesla right across the street from here.
Yeah.
And you got how many different electric cars are out on the market right now, you know?
Yeah, and if you can't afford a Tesla, buy a high-mileage vehicle. I mean, I'm driving a 7-year-old Toyota Prius that gets 45 miles to the gallon, and so, you know, when prices go up to $4, it's not as big a deal than if I was driving a Hummer that was getting 10 or 11 miles per gallon.
Definitely.
So, you know, if I can go into geek mode again, I've actually run the numbers on this.
I didn't know you got out.
Yeah, well, it's part of my job, you know. I'm a numbers guy. I've got my financial calculator. I actually sat down one afternoon and crunched the numbers on all this stuff, and even I was surprised at how it rolled out. So just to give you an example, if you're, again, 20 years old, and you lease a new car every 3 or 4 years for a 55-year driving lifetime, and add in the lease costs, the insurance, the gas, the maintenance, repairs, all the stuff that goes with a relatively low-cost car of about $20,000, your monthly cost is a little over $600, right? So if you repeat that every 3 or 4 years, at the end of the day, if you had not done that and instead invested that $620 a month, getting the historical average stock market return again, you would have ended up with over $6 million in your pocket at the end. $6 million. So for many people, personal transportation is one of the biggest financial outlays they'll have, probably behind their housing expense. And the thing is, it's really controllable. You know, if you drive a gently used car and drive it till it's dead, that 6.7 million number drops very dramatically. And so even better, you know, if you can use public transit or take a bike and avoid having a car completely, you do some nice things for the earth, but you also put an awful lot of money back in your pocket. And so I try to encourage young adults, as they're starting to think about this, to see about whether there are any alternatives that work for their lifestyle. You know, maybe there aren't and they really do need to have a car. And if that's the case, find something that's functional and decent quality, that you don't spend a lot of money on the ridiculous doodads that don't add any value to getting you to point A to point B. And just think of it as a functional piece of transportation and drive it till it drops. And then put the money you save in an investment account so that it will serve you well as you get older.
You mentioned something off mic about where you live. And you said down in Southern California, you got to have a car. And up here, you don't necessarily, you know, it's not exactly the same. We're not as spread out.
Right.
And it's not as wide an area. And also, you know, the powers that be have seen to it that public transportation hasn't come back the way it used to be, the way it could have been. We don't really have it. It's not quite there yet. It'd be great if it was. If BART went around the bay 24 hours a day, I could take it from my house to work,
right,
25 miles each way, and I'd gladly do that, but it doesn't do it.
Well, and there, even in the Bay Area, you know, there's some really nice, there's some car sharing companies that are available.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
I think one of them is on the Stanford campus. And I read as well that there's a bike sharing program that's going to be starting up in the city and as well some of the peninsula towns, an 18-month pilot that's going to be starting in spring 2012. So there's a lot of good options out there if you look into them and see if you can make them work for you.
I've noticed something with the younger culture up here in the Bay Area. I don't know. I guess in Southern California you can't do it, or you'll have to stay in a smaller area. But I notice a lot of the 20-somethings now, a lot of them are hip to the bicycle. I see that they don't have a lot of stuff. They usually got not even a backpack, a little satchel with their computer, which has their entire life on it. Mm-hmm. They got their phone, and then they're riding bikes. And I see more, and not just around the campus. It's not just campus culture. You see it in the city now a lot. And I think they got the message, because they definitely do not want to go down that trap and that road, especially if you live in the city, of owning a car, because, you know, it'll just strangle you. You spend all your money on that. And I think across the country, in certain areas, it's become like that, you know. Have you noticed that at all down in Southern California?
Well, as we were talking off the air, that it's really, really hard in Southern California to get by without a car. You know, it's so spread out, and it's much more difficult to build up a robust mass transit system in an area that is so dispersed like that. And so it makes me really happy to hear you say that you're seeing a lot of people in their 20s looking at different alternatives. And, you know, certainly the weather we have in California makes something like biking pretty feasible most of the year. And actually, I was surprised to read that actually Portland, Oregon is the city that has the most number of biking commuters despite the rain. So
the mayor still rides his bike to work every day.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's a real visionary. And that town is more set up for bicycles than it is for cars.
Yeah, which is great.
It really is. That's probably the wave of the future, too. Talking to the author of the new book, Stanford grad and author, James Wood, the book From Ramen to Riches, Building Wealth in Your 20s. You going to be doing any book events while you're up here in the Bay Area?
This will be my only one up here. We're mostly up here on vacation, so was grateful to have the chance to stop by the studio and talk with you, Bird, while we're up here. But
we're honored to have you. Just briefly, you were born in Hanau, Germany. You went to undergrad at Boston U. What did you study when you were at Boston U?
I was a psychology major and computer science minor.
Really?
Believe it or not, yeah.
Interesting. What were your plans on that?
Well,
were you going to be a psychologist?
You know, at the time I was really into looking at the benefits of running, not just physically, but mental health benefits. And by the time I got to be a junior, I realized that I'd need to go to school for 4 or 5 more years. And I was really getting ready to be done with being an impoverished student, so I took the minor in computer science and was lucky to land a job as a software engineer when I graduated. But it's been handy having, you know, the background in both.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And then you came to Stanford. Well, you went to work for HP, and while you were out here, you went the grad school,
right?
And you got a master's in engineering. Was that software engineering or straight up engineering?
Engineering management, actually. So it's kind of like an MBA for engineers.
Like in building or like in computer tech?
My emphasis was mostly in the software area. So about 2/3 of the courses were, you know, kind of technical updating courses, and the remainder were business type courses. So it was a really good blend of both.
Did that help you in your career? Were you able to upgrade your career after you got out of grad school?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and particularly having the academic background in, you know, how business works and how to do cost accounting and marketing and things that I really hadn't had much exposure to prior.
Mm-hmm. Now, and then you retired from HP, what, how long ago?
5 years ago. I was 47, and my son was 4 at the time. So my wife had stayed home for a couple of years after he was born, and then I wanted to have a chance to do the same. And so I spent a couple of years with my son Jordan before he went off to kindergarten and first grade. And you know, that's been one of the nice things about starting to pay attention to my money early, is that I've got the choice now that I'm in my early 50s, which is kind of shocking to say. To spend my time on things that are really important to me.
Yeah, that must make you feel really good. Speaking of the tech world, you were there when it exploded, because it really started to take off in the 80s. But by the 90s, I know it changed the entire complexion of this area right here, Silicon Valley and even north. It bled the whole peninsula, not bled, but it seemed to affect the whole area. Property values skyrocketed because everybody wanted to live here. The mass of people that came in here to work in the high tech industry raised the level of intelligence, I think, about 100-fold. And what changes did you see in the world around you during that time, because you got a unique perspective.
I think in terms of what I saw, there were really two big disruptive forces that arrived during my career in high tech. The first, as we've talked about, is the arrival of the personal computer. And what that did in terms of making computers accessible to everybody. And then in the 90s, as you mentioned, the arrival of the internet and the whole crazy time of the dot-com frenzy. My wife actually was chief operating officer of a dot-com for a while.
And so, startup.
Yeah, so we used to commute from San Francisco down to Cupertino every day. It was a 100-mile round-trip commute, and I'd drive, and Lauren would be on the cell phone all the way down and all the way back talking with her sales reps. And it was a lot of fun for about the first 15 months, you know, while there was a lot of venture capital money and everybody wanted anything to do with a business that had a dot-com at the end. And then reality came into play, and everything came crashing down, at least for about 80% of those startups.
They called it the tech bubble.
Right.
And it burst.
That part wasn't so much fun.
Well, some venture capitalists lost some money. Oh,
yeah,
well,
a little bit.
Sorry. Sand Hill Road became ground zero.
Yeah, some of them made a bunch, too. You know, you think about Amazon.com, for example. They grew up during that period, and
sure,
they survived and thrived.
Cisco was born here on this campus.
Yep.
Then there was these two kids who were going to college here.
Google.
And they had an idea, and they shopped it all over campus.
Yeah.
And one of Sanford's main functions here is to foster that kind of atmosphere where companies can be born here, and then they'll get a piece of it. And these kids were told, no, 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 it won't work, it won't work. And so they took it off campus to their apartment, and it turned into this little thing called Google.
Well, and you know, Stanford really is an amazing place when you think about all the ideas that have been nurtured here and the companies that were kind of born here. And, you know, even Hewlett and Packard got their start here with Fred Terman in the 1930s.
Wow.
And so it's really been quite a wonderful place in terms of the contributions.
Speak about that a little bit. I never heard that story before. I know about the garage off campus. And did they both go to Stanford?
They did, yeah.
But who was Fred Terman?
One of their mentors, a professor in the School of Engineering, and he was instrumental in bringing them together and encouraging them to start the business.
Wow.
And so, yeah, the famous garage out on, I think it's Addison Avenue.
Still there.
It's now a historic landmark.
Right.
Yep.
Funny, too, how it repeats itself, you know?
You had
HP, and then you had, Apple, and you had Steve Jobs and Wozniak, but then you had the two Google kids. And which leads me again, what's next? And you know there's going to be something
bigger.
There's
going to be something, and we have no idea what it is.
I know. It's kind of scary to think about. We're here with the author, James Wood, the book From Ramen to Riches. Let's play another song. And this is, this really is indicative of that era, too. I remember when it came out, Madonna's Material Girl.
Yeah.
Why did you pick this?
Well, you know, again, as you mentioned, it was popular in the 1980s and a reflection of our culture at the time, and I suspect it probably still is. You know, it's about the quest for stuff and acquiring material things and keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Some boys taste
Madonna on KZS. She is lunch special. Remember, you can hear this show, you can rehear this show if you go on Radio for All, radio4all.org, and just look up the lunch special, KZSU's lunch special. Every show's archived, and we want to thank our producer Blue for doing that. And she usually gets it up by the next day. Speaking of Material Girl, you got 50-something Madonna and her buddy Lady Gaga. And it's funny because, you know, Lady Gaga, a lot of people are turned off by Lady Gaga just from the standpoint of she seems so audacious. But she's a social activist, where Madonna was a little bit when it came to sexual mores. She dumped Madonna, tried to stretch the envelope. But to show how much things have changed, Lady Gaga's the new Madonna, and she admits it, and she was inspired by her. But now she'll... the things she does are totally social active, and she really blatantly uses whatever power she has. And she'll tell her audience, too, how to vote or call your congressman. Or what do you think about that? Does that inspire you?
Well, you know, it's certainly it's reflective of what we were talking about before the song, on the impact that technology has on today's world, and in particular when you think about social media and how different artists and really how anybody's using it to be able to reach large groups of people in a short period of time. You know, mm-hmm. You think of Twitter, Facebook, any number of those sorts of technologies are really incredible in terms of their power and what they can do.
Yeah, they unseated the president of Egypt, didn't they?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And if they don't be careful, they might unseat somebody over here, like all of them. You never know. They could get inspired. No, you're. What are you looking forward to on the book? As far as where would you like to see your book really have some impact? Of course, with the kids, but I mean, you must be thinking about places you'd like to really inject it.
Well, you know, I wrote From Ramen to Riches with an eye toward helping young adults in particular avoid the financial mistakes that I made during that time in my life. And so it's been fun to do media appearances like this one. And I'm looking forward to a number of others coming up in September.
Yeah, Blue said you're going to be on NPR.
It's actually on PBS, the Nightly Business Report, should be sometime in September, a commentary on there.
Do you have a website where folks can find out about that?
Yeah, actually, fromramentoriches.com.
Okay.
And there's some good additional information on in the resources area of the website as well that people can refer to for places to go and more specific information on things regarding their personal finance life and ways to go about learning more. To get good and to get competent at taking command of their financial life.
Definitely. The book, Ramen to Riches, author James Wood, Stanford grad and author. And just as we wrap up here, James, what's your hope for the future? As far as, say you got a kid, your kid's 9, right?
That's right. Yep.
And what do you hope for his future, knowing what we know now about everything?
I'm an optimist at heart, and what I wish for Jordan is a life full of joy and abundance, and I wish that for everybody. And, I guess that's the message I want to leave everybody with, that we all have goals and dreams for our life, and money can be a real enabler for helping make many of those dreams become real. And so please learn how to take command of your financial life, so that you can live the life you want to live, whatever that looks like for you, and cast off whatever shackles might be binding you in terms of, I can't do that because I don't have enough money. That's an excuse.
Always? How about if you're poor?
I think, you know what? I think most kids in this country have a realistic potential to retire a millionaire. It's not that hard, and it doesn't require a whole ton of money, as long as you start early in terms of developing habits that will serve you well and learn to save and invest.
What's your view on philanthropy? You think the rich have a responsibility to help the rest of the folks reach that goal? So if you're born poor, you think the rich have a responsibility to maybe help somebody like you get a message out or help the kids learn this kind of a thing?
Well, you know, I've been gratified to see, for example, people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates stepping up and challenging other others of their peers to do just that and contribute the bulk of their money to charitable foundations to do good in the world. So it's really gratifying to see that kind of thing. But really, I think we all have a responsibility at some level, regardless of how much money we have, to do what we can to help out those that don't have a lot. You know, so if you don't have a lot of money, maybe you have some time that you can contribute. So, you know, hopefully we all can do stuff like that.
Very cool. Well, this has been a really refreshing hour, and I want to thank you for your time, James Wood. The book, once again, From Ramen to Riches, Building Wealth in Your 20s, from Tanny Wood Group, Inc., the website from ramentoriches.com. And James, come back anytime soon, okay?
Thanks, Bird. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. What are we going out with?
This is one of the greatest rock anthems of all time, one of my most favorite songs. And, you know, to me, the song's about freedom and living the life that you want to live. It's Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen.
All right, The Boss on KZSU.